All right, go ahead.
All right, let's rock, man. Let's just fucking go. I'm already shit-faced anyways. If you hear me munching, I'm eating a Frankfurt.
Who the hell says Frankfurt?
That's what guys cook for themselves. I made a Frankfurt.
You don't make... Are you being serious?
Yeah, well, like a hot dog, I guess you'd
Why
say.
Why wouldn't you say hot dog?
I don't know. I'm kind of sophisticated. And
who the hell says Frankfurt?
I don't know. I lived in Germany for several years. Maybe that's part of it.
You're so weird.
But intriguing, at least.
No, weird.
not even weird, intriguing, just weird as in just restraining order weird.
So strange. I'm being a Frankfurt.
Fuck. Oh well. Anyway.
Says that.
Anyway.
What was he wearing? Well, he was wearing a red Argyle sweater and tan trousers and red shoes. Hmm? No, he's not retarded. No.
Hello and welcome to another Surviving Brady podcast. My name is Red. Denton is not here. Denton is on a special overseas assignment.
Fuck Denton.
He's doing his work, doing marvelous work for this country. Trust me, when you sleep at night and you feel safe, it's because Denton is making things happen out there. But I will say that today it is an honor to have with us former Yankees reporter, former Orioles reporter, former Ravens reporter, current SB Nation columnist, Emmy winner, full-time ass kicker, and possibly the most misunderstood woman on Twitter, my good friend. And I call her my good friend because I've paid the money to her to call her that. My good friend Jen Royal is with us. Jen, once again, thank you very much for joining us on the Surviving Grady podcast.
Thank you for having me. I promise I won't belch.
Please, I wish you would. How do we keep conning you into showing up? I mean, clearly you know our game. We have really no substance. We just like being around attractive, opinionated women. So you seem to, that's okay with you.
Yeah, as long as you keep calling me attractive, I'll keep.
Excellent.
As long as you keep giving me the attention that I crave.
We're going to make it happen. Speaking of attention, you know, on the subject of Twitter, I'm constantly amazed. And if you're not following Jen, I should say that you should be following Jen at Jen_Royal. That is R-O-Y-L-E, not R-O-Y-A-L, as you may be inclined to mistake. It's R-O-Y-L-E. You attract a lot of venom out there. But I've met you several times. I've met you at charity functions, ironically enough.
It's shocking. People tell me I have no soul, but exactly. I do charity events all the time.
For a mean fucker like yourself, I see you at charity functions, and I can say without hesitation that you are a nice person, a very, very nice person, in fact. So I guess haters gonna hate, and that's just how it is.
I will say this: there's only if you've met me, you would never hate me. Does that make any sense? I mean, most of the people who know me don't hate me. The only people who hate me are people who, you know me as some chick who hates their baseball team, which is ridiculous. But I mean, it's like hating Skip Bayless, or it's like hating Stephen A. Smith.
I do hate those two guys, but
right,
but I've met you, so, and I don't hate you, so that's...
But I'm that opinionated.
Exactly.
I mean, I honestly think that my opinions aren't very far-fetched. In fact, looking back at all of the things that I said in Baltimore, I was pretty right on. I really can't think of a lot of things that I said that didn't come to fruition.
I think we need more of that. Where are the opinionated women in the Boston media
They're
scene? Where are they?
Absolutely nowhere to be found.
Where are they?
It's Boston. It's really everywhere. I think as you've seen on Twitter, it's really hard to be an opinionated female because you see what you get back.
Exactly.
No, I mean, it's not like, you know, a guy where it's like, oh, shut up, you douchebag, or shut up, you idiot. You know, if you're a female and you have an opinion and someone disagrees with you, you are a stupid, ugly whore. And it is, they take it to a whole new level with women. And it's really sad, actually. It's really sad.
It is. And I think this is a market that, it's interesting because this is probably one of the premier sports markets in the country. And I'm amazed. You know, I can listen to EEI all day. I can listen to 98.5. I don't know that I hear any female voices the whole day. And, you know, I think that's kind of interesting to me. Just interesting to me.
Well, honestly, I think two things. And first of all, I've said this on various websites or radio interviews that I've done, two things. One, women don't want radio because They want, I mean, women just want television. We want attention. We want to have our face out there, you know, and I get it. I mean, who doesn't want to be on TV? I mean, everybody wants that big TV sports job. But if you are opinionated like me, I mean, you want radio because there aren't that many television opportunities where you can give your opinion. Mm-hmm. If you think about it,
right.
I mean, you're 20 seconds on the field giving a Celtics report or a Los Angeles Lakers report. I mean, there's not that much room for an opinion. It's if you have an opinion, you want radio, and you want to. I'd rather be in a room with a bunch of dudes talking sports, and trash talking than being on television for 15 seconds. So I think it's different. The other thing too is, with total all due respect, there are so many talented women out there in sports. There's not that many women that can do radio, and I'm not even saying that I can. It's really hard. When I first started co-hosting in Baltimore, my boss would say to me, Jen, you're on the radio and you're spewing facts. No one wants to hear that. They want to be entertained in some way, shape, or form. You are acting like a reporter on the radio, and it's really friggin' boring. So you have to have a personality, you have to have a big sense of humor, and you have to be able to report and give your opinion and state facts all at the same time. It's not that easy to do.
Exactly. You're a woman on the radio. Tell us what kind of underwear you're wearing, for Christ's sakes. Don't.
Yeah. Oh, I'm not wearing any underwear.
Well, that makes two of us. Well, you've done them both, and I can say, as someone who's met you, I'm a big Jen Royal fan, for what
Thank
that's
you.
Worth.
But you do know this, if you cross me, you're in trouble.
I would never cross you. It's just not gonna happen.
You're on my bad side. It's definitely not fun for you.
Alright, well, enough of that bullshit. Tell me, young Jennifer, did you think that the Red Sox would, let me just back up a little bit. I thought, yes. After the big trade, I drink a lot. I do a lot of heroin.
You have a lot of issues.
I have a lot of issues. See, you could write books.
You have sex with farm animals.
And I do.
There's some deep-rooted shit going on there.
The thing about the farm animals, they can't run, you know? I mean, if you get them at the, you know. Anyway, after the big trade, I did start to sort of delude myself and think, this is the turnaround, magical things are going to happen. And as the Yankees came into Fenway this week, I actually did think that the Red Sox would play spoiler to the Yankees. I was in New Jersey before the series kicked off, and hearing the New York sports radio, all they were talking about was the Yankees got to go in there and get things done. The Red Sox are a dead team. Score early. They won't do it. You know, they'll fold up. I thought they were going to play spoiler. Did you feel the same way? Did you figure they were pretty much going to shit the bed again? I mean, did you? I do a lot of heroin, but I did think they were going to sweep this series. I did. I honestly did.
No, I think you've definitely hit that crack pipe one too many times. I did not think they were going to sweep the Yankees. I thought they were going to get swept. I just don't really see a lot of good things with this baseball team right now. And I don't think that it's abnormal or unusual for a team to not play even to their own crappy potential when they know that they're completely out of it. I mean, look at the Orioles for the past 14 years. I mean, when I was in Baltimore covering the O's, it was, I think about May 1st that you had already seen a difference in their play, because they knew that they were just, they had no chance. They were already, you know, 3-22. I think you do lose a little bit of your competitive nature when you know you're not going to make the playoffs. And I think this has been a really hard year for Boston, and then add September baseball that doesn't mean anything. I did not think that they were going to turn things around. There was just no way.
And I clung tenaciously to that, thinking they might, but obviously in the end they kind of disappointed.
Well, even if they did turn things around, everybody else would have had to lose. And I think for the first time in, goodness, I can't even remember when. I guess for Oakland, what, 99, when they played the Red Sox? This is the first time that we've seen teams with very low payrolls and a lot of young players emerging. I mean, look at Oakland, look at Baltimore. I mean, no one thought the White Sox were going to do what they did. Everybody thought that, you know, Detroit was going to run away with the division. Look at the Washington Nationals, for Christ's sake. I mean, there are so many teams emerging this year that have been at the bottom of the barrel for so long. It's really been, in my opinion, a good thing for baseball.
So who do you like in the is there anyone who excites you? I mean, obviously the Red Sox it's really all over but the shouting as far as they're concerned, but mm-hmm. Does anyone you're kind of rallying behind, anyone you're kind of excited to see?
I'm a little, yeah, like, Yeah, I always rally behind Tampa. I love everything about the Rays. I hope that they can make a little bit of a comeback. I don't like them right now, 3.5 back. Just from top to bottom, from Andrew Friedman, their owner, president, Matt Silverman, to Joe Maddon, their manager, I think they have such a great core group of players that all came up in the system together. I love the fact that nobody is overpaid. Nobody has these heavy contracts that cause drama on the ball club. I love the atmosphere that Joe Maddon has created. I think, obviously, they still don't have a great fan base, but no one really does in Florida except really the Dolphins, because nobody is from Florida. It's a bunch of transplants.
Right.
So they're still struggling with that fan base, but I've always rooted for Tampa. I'm really good friends with a couple of the coaches, and Todd Callis, who's their Harry Callis' son, he's their field reporter. So I pull for certain people. I'm pulling for Joe Maddon. I'm pulling for Tampa, and I've always loved Texas. I love the Rangers. So I'm kind of pulling for those two teams. Certainly not. Unfortunately, I'm such a hater. I'm not really pulling for Baltimore. I'm not pulling for Chicago. I just don't think there's really any great stories there. My problem with Baltimore is I'm so happy for the players, because nobody deserves this more than Nick Markakis, obviously, who's hurt now. But Adam Jones truly deserves, everything that he's getting right now, especially Matt Wieters. I love Buck Showalter. I have a great relationship with him. I just think the fans have been just so disrespectful, and they've just been so crappy, and they've handled things so poorly this year, and I'm just so disappointed in the way that they've behaved. It's, they're acting as if that they've already won the World Series. Just the way that they're insulting other people, and just the bravado coming out of that city. It's like, do you not realize that after 14 years, like, something at some point is bound to happen? You know what I mean? It's like they're celebrating the fact that it's not 15 years of hatred. It's not 15 years that we're at the bottom of the barrel. It's like, well, so, I mean, great. Well, it would have been better if it was only 8 years in last place, or 7 years, but 14. I'm really disappointed in the way those guys have acted, and you've seen it on Twitter.
I'm throwing my support behind the Oakland A's for no other reason than the fact that I love the Moneyball film, and I'm a huge Coco Crisp fan. So wherever Coco Crisp goes, I follow. Josh Reddick also. It's interesting to see. I think a team like that doing well does good for the game. I think that people...
Yes, it's a baseball.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think seeing anything... That's why I say about the Rays. I still maintain to this day that in the wake of 2004 and 2007, I can look at the 2008 ALCS and say that may have been the greatest series we were ever a part of. It sucked to lose. On the heels of two World Series, it did. I mean, if we hadn't won 2004 and 2007, right, I'd be dead, because I would have offed myself somehow if we had lost that series. But if we hadn't won the two previous World Series, but that was an amazing series,
it was,
and I think
awesome.
And when teams like that do well, I think that does well for just the sport of baseball. The fact that you don't have to break the bank, you don't have to go
right
after every high priced player to contend.
But it took a while. I mean, look how long it took Tampa to build that farm system to where those kids came up at 23 years old and were finally all-stars. I mean, it took a long time. It did. And that's one of the most difficult things to do, is to maintain your farm system while still going out and spending money on veteran guys, because you do have to have that mix. And it was really 2008 when Joe Maddon and the Rays when they went, the year they went to the World Series, but they had Troy Percival, they had Eric Hinsky, and they had, some veteran leadership with a really young core group of guys. And Joe Maddon told me, it's that mix. It's the veterans aren't too bossy, but they're mentors to the young kids, and the young kids have fun, but they don't run wild because the mentors and the veterans are there.
Right.
And even talking to guys with the Marlins who won in 2003, they've said to me, Jen, it has to be the perfect group of guys. It has to be the perfect formula to win a World Series. It's not just what goes on the field. A lot of it has to do with what happens off the field and what happens in the clubhouse. And I just think the Rays have always had that good chemistry, that
right
good mix.
Now, by the way, are you calling me from the local bus depot? Because I'm getting worried. Are you going to hit by a car? Are you just very close to the street wherever you are right now?
I am. Well, I live in the north end of Boston.
Gotcha.
Which is awesome, which is why I'm such a fat ass, because I live across the street from Bova's Bakery. And, yeah, I think a truck just went by.
How far are you from Pizzeria Regina?
Oh, I can throw a rock at it.
Oh, that's good stuff.
I know. I don't go in there anymore because I walk in and the guy's like, Jennifer, have a seat. And it's like, oh, shit. I'm like I'm on death row. So I've actually tried to stay out of there. I did, however, join the local yoga studio, which is hilarious because nothing about me is graceful. I'll show you my legs the next time I see you, and they are atrocious. I have so many scars and cuts and bruises on my legs. So I joined yoga, and I've been doing Pilates, and I've been really trying to get in shape and stay out at Pizzeria Regina. And it's actually gone well.
All right, so the Red Sox, God love them, they got rid of Beckett, they got rid of Crawford, they got rid of Gonzalez. Is there anyone else you think needs to go between now and opening day 2013? I do sort of expect, ooh. You know, I hate to say this, but I don't hate to say this. We spend a lot of money for them. I'm rooting for the John Lackey comeback special in 2013.
So am I. I got to tell you, I think he's going to have a good year. From what I've heard and, you know, from what just, you know, I've seen, he's worked really hard to get back. He really has. He's worked really hard to get back. And I'm sorry, I am telling you, I don't know why he's gotten so much shit for being with the team this year, because Jacoby Ellsbury got a lot of crap when he didn't rehab with the ball club. And I think it shows a lot about a guy who wants to be on the road with his team, rehabbing and being with his coaches and being with the trainers and being around, you know, the team doctors and getting updates and getting treatment every day and being with his ball club, even when they're losing. They're having a losing season and he's still sticking around. It's not like, hey, I'm going to go along for the ride because, you know, it's all fun and games and the champagne clubhouse is coming soon. That's not coming, you know?
Right.
And I just love the fact that he's with the team. And I think he's really somewhat kind of turning things around. And I think Josh Beckett leaving had a lot to do with it. And, you know, John Lester even said when Beckett was out the door, you know, he was really stubborn. He was really, you know, I think, you know, the fact that Beckett was stubborn really bit him in the ass. And, you know, those are the words of Lester. And I agree. I think it got so bad for Beckett. He had this role to play, which was, you know, the douchebag on the team that just didn't give a crap about anything. And I really honestly can see Lackey turning things around. And also, I have talked to so many people who were his ex-teammates in Anaheim, and Red, they love him.
Really?
I'm telling you, I talked to one guy on the Minnesota Twins, and he used to be teammates with Lackey, and he said to me, are we talking about the same John Lackey? And I said, you know, he's like the most hated guy in Boston. And he did not believe me. He was like, are you kidding me? He was like the greatest teammate I ever had. And the other thing, too, is, you know, the media and the fans say, you know, he's such a bad teammate, he's a bad influence. Then why do all the current Boston Red Sox love him? No one has a problem with Lackey.
Well, where does that go? I mean, where do you think something like that? Is it purely a situation where it's the money the guy's making that people say, oh, he's making so much money? I mean, I don't understand where do we cultivate the hate for a guy like Lackey? Yeah. Because I don't think I've seen enough of him to say I don't like the man. I mean, I don't really know the guy enough to say I don't like him. I mean, I wish he performed a little bit better his first year with us, but is it simply a reaction to the type of money these people are making?
Yeah, I think it's the money. I think it's the years that he got. I mean, I think the fact that he was such a great post-game pitcher with Anaheim and then he came to Boston and just totally sucked. I think his attitude, I don't think he's the greatest interview. I think it's really hard to handle the Boston media, and I think that coming from such a laid-back atmosphere like Anaheim and then coming to Boston and having all these cameras in your face and people questioning you left and right, and it can't be an easy situation, and I think that we forget that a lot. And Carl Crawford couldn't handle it. I know in New York, Carl Pavano couldn't handle it. Randy Johnson couldn't handle it. Kevin Brown couldn't handle it. Not everyone does well on the big stage, and I think there's so much pressure that comes along with playing in Boston, and even though these guys make, oh, they make a lot of money, what do you mean they're rich? Not everyone can handle the spotlight, and I'm not giving Lackey a free pass by any means, but I think once a player, especially a pitcher, gets frustrated with himself and then has to deal with the media, it just snowballs from there. So I think the year off rehabbing and getting rid of Beckett, I think is going to do so much for this guy. I do see good things for him next year. And honestly, the other thing too, Led, since when do we not root for people?
That's a good point. I mean, when
he is still one of ours.
Yeah, like, you're right. You're right.
Yeah, we hope he sucks. This guy's an idiot. You hope he sucks. Really, he's probably going to be your number three starter. Like, why do you hope he sucks? Because you don't like the guy? You know, you still want him to do well. He needs, if you want to make it to the playoffs, you have to be rooting for John Lackey. So I think if we just lay off him a little bit, which is why I gave him a free pass with that bogus double-fisting the beer story in I don't know, where was that, Cleveland?
That's the reason everything's gone wrong, because he drank two beers at once.
He didn't even drink two beers. He had two beers in his possession.
Right.
I mean, trust me, my head will explode if I get into that mess.
I have three beers in my hand right now, and you don't want to know what else I have in my hand, but I'm a horrible person for that. But I mean, I agree. I think these
True.
Things, you're looking for reasons to crucify
That's
these people.
That's exactly
which is,
it. And he's living in the shadow of September, and my plea to Red Sox fans is let's just lay off this guy.
Right.
Let's just lay off him and let's see what happens. But the more we're up his ass and the more we're in his face and the more that we're insulting him for carrying two beers across a locker room, it's just not going to get any better.
I'd much rather be in his face than up his ass, by the way.
Yeah,
just clarify that,
people,
I think.
I think most people would.
Yeah, that's I'll stay on the outside of that. We'll see. Well, I grew up with some pretty, you know, pardon the expression, I grew up with some pretty shitty Red Sox teams, and I'm actually pretty jazzed about seeing these guys become the worst Red Sox team of my lifetime. I know that sounds weird, but I don't think it makes me a bad fan. If you're gonna shit the bed, let's go all out. 1992, on this date, 1992 stands as the worst Red Sox team of my lifetime. I'm 72, so that says a lot. On this date, on September 14th in 1992, the Red Sox were 65-78. Right now, the Red Sox are 64-80. So they're actually doing worse than the worst Red Sox team of my lifetime is doing. They're only just a few wins better than the worst team of my lifetime. And I did you? Are you okay? Did you?
I'm good.
That's the spontaneity. I love that. Jen Royal falls down during podcast. Is she okay?
You were talking so much, didn't even know it.
That's it. I'm babbling.
I ran across the street and got a chicken palm calzone. You didn't even notice I was gone.
Anyway, you look back on this Red Sox team. Let's say that they end up being the worst Red Sox team of my lifetime, of our lifetimes. Where at the end of the season, where does the blame go? Who do you point to at the end of this Red Sox season and say, that's the reason we ended up where we are right now?
Everyone. Honestly, I blame the players. They didn't adjust to a new manager, and I think that that's one of the most important things in sports, is to be able to evolve with whatever changes the ball club is making.
Right.
You know, I think a lot of them pouted that, you know, Tito didn't come back, and I think they should have. I don't think they made it very easy on Bobby. I just think the clubhouse rat incident with Middlebrooks, and I think Bobby's to blame with him calling out Youkilis. I think Crawford's to blame for pouting about where he was batting in the lineup, even still this year, bringing up issues from last season. I think that Adrian Gonzalez was a pill, from what I understand. He played GM one too many times. I blame Pedroia for not being a leader. I blame David Ortiz for bitching about his contract and the way he's been treated. I blame the front office for hiring Bobby Valentine. I mean, I blame really everyone.
Can we give Nick Punto some shit in there, too? He deserves
some. Listen, I'm telling you, he was the key to that trade.
He was.
I'm telling you, Los Angeles was like, listen, we are not doing this unless you give us Punto.
That picture of them on the plane. That picture of them on the plane made me physically ill. I don't know why. I mean, I was happy to see them go. But
yeah, you saw, you know, Beckett with his big chipmunk cheek, like, yeah, buddy. You know, he's such a loser. It was pretty sickening.
Snakes on a Plane. I thought of that movie. That's all I could think about.
Yeah,
Snakes
perfectly.
On a Plane.
You know, but yeah, Punto was the key. I'm telling you that. You know, Magic was like, you know, we ain't getting this deal done unless we get that Nick Punto.
He was the linchpin. I think he was the guy, and it was kind of like Lowell was like the sidecar to the Beckett trade when we got him. I think that Gonzo and Crawford and Beckett were the sidecar to the Nick Punto acquisition. That's what they saw. That's what they wanted.
Punto said he felt special for the day, which was good.
That's good.
I'm
on a plane! I'm on my own plane!
Can I get your autograph, Mr. Beckett? I blame everyone. I thought the fans were great this year, honestly. I thought they called it as they saw it. You know, I do make fun of the pink hats all the time, and I always will. But I think them booing Beckett, and I thought was brilliant. I love that they acknowledged the situation, and I love that they acknowledge the shortcomings of this team, and I love the fact that they didn't go to the games, and they were so interested in the Patriots. I mean, I went to training camp in Foxborough, and nobody was talking about the Red Sox, and if you brought it up, they're like, screw them, because I think they just acted so spoiled this year, and I love that the fans acknowledge that.
Really? I can imagine Patriots camp being interrupted by LaVarnway talk. I can just imagine this. Well, you know what? You mentioned the pink hats and things like that. I think it's funny that I hear people these days, people who have basically latched onto the team since 2004, complaining about that. I mean, I grew up, and again, I'm 76 years old. I grew up with some pretty shitty, as I've said, shitty Red Sox teams, and those two World Series victories were things I never expected to see. And you know, I almost want to say to them, you don't know how good you have it right now.
It's,
I mean,
true.
It's insane. There was a time when I thought Dante Bichette was the secret, was the key, was the missing ingredient. When we signed Dante Bichette, I thought, we're going to win the World Series. We got a fucking thing wrapped
up.
Hey,
you know what? They won the World Series in 2004 because of Dave Roberts. So
exactly.
Honestly, that's that formula. It's that one little piece that ends up making everything come together. But listen, we're so lucky in Boston that we can focus on the Celtics and we can focus on the Patriots, and honestly, being at training camp, it made you forget about the Red Sox. That's the good thing about being in Boston.
I
actually forgot about the drama and the BS that was happening, you know, 30 miles down the road, because the Patriots are so exciting. I mean, would you rather live in Kansas City, you know, or in a town where, or a city where you only have, I mean, again, let's just shit on them. Look at Baltimore. They don't even have an NFL team. I mean, I'm sorry, an NBA or an NHL team.
Right.
And their baseball team has sucked for 14 years. And they have the Ravens. So if the Ravens have a bad season, I mean, they're all suicidal. They have nothing to, they have absolutely nothing to fall back on except drinking. But all they drink is Natty Bo, which is like, again, what you're drinking, piss in a can. It's
And as you were saying that, I actually did accidentally grab one of the urine-filled cans, so you don't know how right you are. Now, when Terry Francona was here, we look back now and everyone talks about the, you know, the quote-unquote salad days of Terry Francona. I honestly don't even know what the salad days means. I just like saying that. Do you think that their success under Tito was a product of the players or of the manager?
Both. I think it's both. I think you have to have respect for your manager. And these players, the majority of them, don't have any respect for Bobby. And that's the problem. And then you see the coaches not having respect for Bobby. And that's a problem.
And can the players just kind of dial? And like some people say, the players just gave
up
their stuff.
Yeah, they can.
I mean, can they just and say, you know what, fuck it. I don't like this guy. I'm not playing.
I'm telling you. I mean, Jacoby Ellsbury told somebody on a visiting team, you know what, yeah, some people don't like Bobby, but you know what? If you come in every day and you do your work and you play your game, why does it matter? Honestly.
Is Bobby V here next year?
Hell no.
Jeez.
Are you out of your... I hope not, for his sake. First of all, I'm sure he's a very nice man and a great husband and a great father or a grandfather and an uncle and all that good stuff. He needs to go live his life and be happy.
Right.
Honestly. Because I know what it was like in Baltimore when... There was nothing I could have said right. I could have been like, oh my goodness, it's a beautiful day, the sky is blue. And somebody would have been like, fuck you, bitch, it's purple. Get out, get out of here. I mean, there was nothing I could have said right. Because when people don't like you, they don't want to hear what you have to say. It's very difficult for somebody to say, you know what, I haven't liked you for 2 years, but this time you're right. I agree with you. Like, no. It doesn't happen that way. And I know what it's like to be in a place where no one or the majority of the people don't appear to be on your side. And it's a lonely place, and it's no way to live. And I feel sorry for him, and I know that I'm sure he has a ton of pride, and he doesn't want to be fired. And I'm sure that this is his dream job. Who wouldn't want to manage the Boston Red Sox? And I'm sure he's going to be really upset when he leaves, looking back at how things started and finished.
Right.
I just think it's best for him to go, because I just don't think he can do, I don't think it's a good fit. And that's, again, Red, back to the whole World Series champion puzzle pieces. It has to be a good fit, especially in Boston. Not only manage what's going on the field, but you have to manage personalities. And he clearly fails at that.
So who do they bring in now? I mean, you hear talk about John Farrell, Dale Swaim. I think Jen Royal was mentioned as a potential manager. I mean, who do you bring in at this point to clean up the mess? And who comes in? I mean, I look at John Farrell and I say, okay, so they think you bring him in. He speaks the language of the pitchers. He can turn John Lester around and all this stuff. But this guy's team is barely better than ours. I mean, granted, he doesn't have the parts that we have. But is he the answer? Is it someone else? Who do they bring in to kind of – who would you suggest they bring in to sweep up this mess, if anyone?
Well, first of all, I think a monkey would do a better job than Bobby Valentine.
Like a monkey. Well, now let's clarify this. A monkey like Cornelius from Planet of the Apes?
At least the players could like pat his head and like, you know, pat his bum.
Exactly.
And he's kind of cute and he's a little bit entertaining.
Well, Cornelius was smart, as I recall. He had like a suit and shit. He was a smart.
Yes, that's right.
Exactly.
Honestly, I do see John Farrell managing this ball club. I have a source that said he will be the manager of this team. The Red Sox will make it happen next year. I don't think it matters what Toronto has done, because those aren't exactly the 27 Yankees. He doesn't have the right pieces over there. And from what I understand, he's not, I wouldn't say the best of terms with GM Alex Anthopoulos. So I know they're not going to give him away for free, but I do think if they can work something out with the Red Sox, I can see a trade being made for Farrell, because he is under contract till 2014 with the Blue Jays, but they're not going to let him go for nothing. They're going to try to get something for him. But I think it'll be an amicable split with him in Toronto, and he's a great man. He's a great coach. He has a presence about him where he demands respect and demands the spotlight.
Right.
And the majority of the players obviously already know him and have a relationship with him. And from everyone that I've talked to, Led, he appears to be a very well-respected, great guy. And I think that's what this team needs. And I don't see the players pulling the crap that they pulled with Farrell like they did with Bobby.
Now, with all this money freed up, how do the Red Sox even start to rebuild? If there's one person you could point to and say, I'd like to see them sign this person, who would that one person be?
Well, I'm biased. Mike Napoli from the Texas Rangers. I make no secret about it that he's clearly one of my best friends.
Uh-huh.
But he's such a baller. And this guy is still upset over the World Series last year.
Does well at Fenway, too. So.
Yeah, he does great at Fenway.
Where's he from? Where's he from originally?
He's from Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Okay.
And he's just, he's such a great teammate to his teammates. And everyone in Anaheim loved him. Everybody in Texas loves him. He's such a baller. He gives 100% all the time. He just, I don't even know, because I'm not really following Texas right now. I don't know if he's still on the DL, but the last time I saw him, he was injured. And he was playing hurt because he was like, you know, the DL is for wimps. I'm not going on the DL. So, I mean, he's like the anti-Josh Beckett, for crying out loud. He's just, you know, he can catch. He can play first. He's got, you know, he hits for power. He's a good first baseman. He's gotten so much better. And, you know, I think he'd be a good fit here. I mean, I think they should go after him. Obviously, it's his choice. He's a free agent. I do think he wants to stay in Texas. But you never know what's going to happen. But I think pitching... is really the number one thing at the top of their list. And come on, you can say that every year. You can never have enough good pitching. And,
right.
You know, you never know what's going to happen with Buchholz and Lester. And I think Lackey's going to have a good year, but you just don't know. And in this division, you have to have a solid 1-2-3 or you're not going to win.
As soon as the trade was done, the big trade was done, TradeZilla was completed, and all these names are being bandied about, names like Josh Hamilton, Zach Greinke, things like that, and people were like, oh, don't bring those nuts into Boston. It's funny because you actually know these people. You've worked,
I do.
You know, and it's your insight. I was listening to you on the DA show that night, and your insight was so amazing because it was like, all right, you hear these things on Twitter, people back and forth, just because of the stuff they've read, hearsay, things like that. You actually knew these people, and it was interesting to get your insight, and I found that fascinating, and I think that's the, you know, that's the kind of insight that I think made me better appreciate the viability of bringing some of these people into town.
Well, honestly, you know, I covered the Yankees for 7 years, but it was my goal to always go to the visiting clubhouse. When you have any downtime, go next door, build relationships, talk to players. I've introduced myself to every manager in baseball every year. I always go next door and pick their brains or listen to their press conferences pregame. And I really prided myself on that. And then when I got my job in Baltimore, because I had done all of that legwork in the visiting clubhouse, I covered the Mets the last 2 years. I was in New York along with the Yankees. And, you know, those two teams are never home at the same time. So once the Yankees hit the road, the Mets come home. So you can cover 162 games in New York if you want.
Right.
I think I did about 150 my last 2 years. And the Mets were horrible in 2008. And I had to be there. So I said, you know what? This sucks. I hate being here at crappy Shea Stadium. I don't even like the National League. I think I'll go next door and talk to Bobby Cox. You know, I think I'll go meet Tony La Russa. I think I'll introduce myself to Chris Carpenter and Albert Pujols. And I did it. And I learned so much. I remember walking into the visiting manager's office and just being like, hey, Bruce Bochy, like, I'm Jen Royal, you know, and I sat down and had, you know, the greatest conversation with him. And every time I see him, he's like, there's that girl. And I think it's so important that you take advantage of your credential. You know, you can only learn and it can only benefit somebody, including yourself, somewhere down the road if you just put a little more work in. So when I got my job in Baltimore, they actually hired me to cover the Orioles for radio, but cover the visiting clubhouse for television. So I would do pregame Buck Showalter in pregame Orioles, and then at 4:15, I would go next door and do my camera with the visiting team.
Buck Showalter became my hero when I found out in that much celebrated Sports Illustrated article that his favorite expression for beating another team was, let's go pound their tits. As soon as I heard that, I said, there's a guy, I just want him to win.
You know what? The Orioles needed that. Yeah. You know, they had Dave Tremblay, which was, I mean, the equivalent of a blow-up doll managing that ball club for so long. They had no leadership. They had – you love blow-up dolls, don't you, Red?
Well, hey, listen, what I do after hours is my business, you know.
What do you mean? You do it during hours.
Hey, if the webcam was on right now, you'd see it happening, so be thankful it isn't.
They had no leadership. They had no inspiration. No, I mean, it was – I remember covering Dave Tremblay and sitting in his press conferences and thinking to myself – I kind of think I want to die. I kind of think I actually want to die. I'm not even sure I want to ask this man any questions. It was like talking to the, who's the guy? Who's the actor?
Who's the actor? I don't know. Mike Myers?
No, who does the Priceline commercials?
Oh, William Shatner.
Yeah. He was like, doesn't he look like William Shatner? Do you even know who Dave Tremblay is?
I have no idea. I don't know who you are.
You know what? I didn't think so.
I have no idea.
You know what? This ass is.
Is this Heidi Watney? Who am I talking to right now? I'm going to put you on this.
Essentially, I am not Heidi Watney.
I miss Heidi Watney. Emmy winner, Jen Royal, you've covered the Ravens, you've covered the Yankees, you've covered the Orioles. You've met a lot of sports figures, a lot of professional athletes.
Yep.
Who is the coolest guy, the coolest athlete that you've met? Like the guy you can point to and say, that's one of the good guys. Like if you had to rate them all, the best guy, the best athlete, the best dude in the bunch, who do you think is the nicest dude?
Mariano Rivera.
Really?
Yeah, he's my
really?
Boy. Yep,
really?
Love Mo.
Who's the biggest asshole?
Carl Pavano, yeah.
Any particular reasons or just because?
He's just a douche.
He is? Well, I won't argue with that. All right. We talked earlier in this podcast about females in this market, female sportscasts and things like that. So tell me a little bit about what you're doing to kind of bring together. I know I watched – my favorite movie is The Avengers, the kind of Legion of Superheroes sort of thing. What are you doing to bring all the kind of female sports reporters together in this market?
I don't know. Just throughout my career, no one really helped me when I was younger. I was kind of thrown into, I guess, you know, the pack of wolves, and I never really had a female mentor. And I'm not saying that that's what I am by any means, but, you know, I encountered probably one of the biggest bitches I've ever met in my life in Baltimore. And just watching her behavior and watching just the way she talked crap about people and put other people down and really let jealousy, you know, kind of take over her personality, it really kind of made me sad for female reporters in this business. And, you know, just some of the crap that females spew at other females, and I got it personally, and it really made me sick. And, you know, I promised myself that I would never treat a female reporter poorly, and I don't think I ever have. And even now, as much as I, you know, hate this person, I feel so sorry for her and her insecurities and the fact that she needs to spew hate, you know, to make herself feel better. So I came to Boston, and I never wanted to experience, you know, that kind of a feeling from another female reporter. And I think it's just really important that people realize that we get so much shit from the fans, you know, and we get so much crap from other reporters and from, you know, I don't even know, I'm kind of making this up, like The Big Lead and Deadspin, and, you know, we get pictures taken of our boobs and of our asses when, you know, we're just standing on the field trying to do our jobs.
Can you send some of those to me, by the way?
You've already taken pictures.
You're right.
You know, and I just think that, you know, we shouldn't shit on each other. It's, if you love yourself and you're secure in your own job and your own talents, then there's really no reason to spew hate at somebody else. So with that being said, I just think it's really important for us females in Boston to be friends, or at least to respect each other. You know, we are females. We're not all going to get along, but right. We're not going to spew hate at each other. We're just not. And if it ever comes to this, then honestly, I might get out of this business, because what I experienced in Baltimore was so disgusting that I think of this bitch and I want to spit on her face. And
don't sugarcoat things for me. Come
honestly,
on.
Honestly, and I never want to feel that way about somebody in my hometown. So me, Trini Kuznarek, the new female reporter at Comcast, Jess Camaretto, also from CSN, who covers the Celtics. We're inviting Jessica Moran, of course, also from Comcast. Jenny Dell, we're going to invite Jackie McMullen, because I think that'll be such a hoot to have her there. I think Maureen from CSN. And we're all going to go out. We're going to have dinner. We're going to have some drinks. And you know what? For the life of me, we're all going to get along. And that's going to be the bottom line.
That's awesome. Do you guys need a driver? Because I'm available. Just keep me in mind, please, if you guys need a driver or a... I think that's an awesome thing. And again,
And it takes one female to kind of like take the bull by the horns and say, listen, we're doing this, you know, and if you don't want to come, then fine, then don't show up, but we're not going to hate each other. And I'm not saying that we do, or that, or we even would if we didn't have dinner together, but I just think we should root for each other and we should support each other. And that's just the bottom line. This is my hometown too, and I think I'm the only female reporter from Boston. I think everyone else is a transplant. So I know I have a lot of pride in Boston. So I don't know. I just want to see us all get along.
Well, as always, Jen Royal, you know I'm madly in love with you.
I know. With that being said, can I put my pants back on?
Yes, you can. Please do. You know what? I can't wait for this fucking year to end.
Honestly,
I can't.
Seriously. I'm excited for the Celtics. I can't wait for the Patriots. I mean, obviously, we're 1-0. I love, you know, football season, drinking on Sundays. I'm going to go to Baltimore for the Ravens-Pats game. I'm just happy that it's coming to an end.
Excellent. I agree with you. And once again, Jen Royal, as always, thank you. Read Jen on SB Nation Boston. Follow her on Twitter at Jen_ROYLE on Twitter. And Jen, thank you once again for being kind to hang out and spend time with us. And hopefully we'll have you back again.
You're welcome. You're a loser.
Yeah, I am. Thank you very much. Take care.